Suzanne Porter, Kathleen Shannon, Edwin J. Vieira, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We'll be speaking with Multnomah County Commission District 1 candidate Vadim Mazirski.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community. I'm Don Merrill, and I'm talking with Vadim Mazirski. Mr. Mazirski is a candidate for the Multnomah County Commission. Vadim, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So I guess the first question I wanted to ask you is why are you running for Multnomah County Commissioner, and which position are you running for?
I'm running for Multnomah County Commissioner District 1, which is all the west side and southeast, inner southeast. The reason I'm running, well, you know, when I ran for city council a couple of years ago, people kept asking me what I would do about homelessness and drug addiction, mental illness in our streets. And every year it gets worse and worse. But guess what? It's not up to city council to address those issues. That is what the county is responsible for. That is the main mission of the county, the human services. And so no matter what polls you look at, homelessness is number one on people's minds, followed by public safety. And then, you know, I'm hearing a lot about cost of living and taxes and housing, and that kind of all intertwines there. And so I'm running to actually address those issues. I think what we're missing very often is our leaders are not listening to us. They have an ideology that they think will work, but they're not listening to the people that are living in Portland day to day and understand what their needs are and understand what the solutions are often.
You know, tell me a little bit about the people of District 1. I mean, who are they as a block? What do they care about that's different from people in other districts? I mean, there has to be a distinction, right? Otherwise, any candidate talking generalities could be elected by any of them.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because when people were making the city districts, so County District 1 is kind of similar to City District 4. Don't ask me why they chose different numbers, but they did. But I went to one of these meetings where they were discussing why City District 4 would be the West Side and Selwood and Eastmoreland. And they said, well, you know, there's a lot of commonality, price of housing and things like that. Well, you know, I think that there's more diversity than there is commonality. You know, in Goose Hollow, where I live, we have one of the highest proportions of Section 8 housing, of housing assistance, and also of rent-burdened individuals. I think the only higher portion proportion of that is in Old Town. And so, yes, we do have the West Hills, which has very affluent people living there, but we also have a lot of individuals that are barely scraping by day to day. And those interests are different. You know, if you talk to people in Old Town, Downtown, and certainly the central Portland, you hear on the east side as well, and you hear a lot about homelessness, drug addiction, mental illness. People are seeing individuals smoking fentanyl in the streets. People are seeing individuals die. I hear that very often, that when people are walking around or going to work, they've seen people actually die in our streets. But then when you go up in some of the further areas, you know, Linton has, their main concern is the CEI hub, the critical infrastructure over there, and what happens if there's an earthquake with all the chemicals and gasoline that's stored over there. And then in Southwest, it's, you know, we need sidewalks. We need more ability to get around. And so Southwest Trails is trying to build more trails because there's not enough sidewalks to get from place to place. So it's actually a pretty diverse community. I don't think you can classify it as homogeneous.
Okay. In one of your interviews, it was noted that your personality is nearly impossible to gauge in a public setting. Do you think that's true? And if it is, can people trust you if you don't do a lot of emoting like a lot of other candidates are doing this election cycle?
Yeah, well, you know, please look at my debates. I think that there's enough emoting over there. I mean, we're living through one of the biggest transformative times in Portland, Multnomah County's history. Again, people are dying in our streets in record numbers, overdose deaths. People are moving away. Businesses are moving away. Every indicator is the wrong way. I do want to say that, you know, part of this is you do have to be out there listening to people and understanding what the issues are. And that means not preaching. You know, a lot of people misunderstand advocacy for preaching. You know, you have to understand what the needs are. You have to be able to talk to people about their needs and what the solutions are. And so there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of energy telling other individuals about what they feel. I think what politicians need to do is listen a little bit more and preach a little bit less.
So you were born in Kyiv, Ukraine. Your family fled persecution from the Soviet Union, and you arrived as refugees in the U.S. when you were 7. Much later, you settled in Houston, Texas. You went to the University of Texas.
That's correct.
So I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of, and so I also see that you were on a lot of different types of commissions, and one of them had to do with Immigrant and Refugee Organization, IRCO.
Yes, IRCO.
So that means that you have a concern for the needs of immigrants and refugees. So as someone from Texas, what are your thoughts about the efforts that some of the southern border states have made to try to make northern states more aware of the border crisis, such as shipping immigrants and refugees to cities like Chicago and New York, Martha's Vineyard? I think it has brought more attention to the immigration crisis and the problem at the southern border, which I think is what they intended. What are your thoughts about that as it affects Multnomah County?
Yeah, how many hours do we have to talk about that conversation? Because you opened up a lot of issues there. So, you know, it's difficult, okay? I mean, I have memories about that. I was pretty young, but I still have memories about that. My parents certainly told me about the difficulties that they faced. No income. You don't know how to get by. You don't know where to go shopping. You don't know, you know, if something happens to you, like my father was robbed. You know, he can't call the police. He doesn't know how that works. But, and so it's difficult. And for me, part of being a progressive is helping people that can't help themselves. And there was a time there when we couldn't help ourselves. You know, we didn't know how things work. And so now, yeah, I'm working with IRCO to help people that need that help at that point in time, kind of give back. You know, I do believe we have to have a system in which we allow immigrants to come here, apply for citizenship, pay taxes, and work here. I think that's what's needed. You know, whether it's for demographics, it certainly helps us down the road and make sure we are able to fund the social services that we need. But it's a tricky question when people cross the border without permission. How do we get them the services? How do we make sure that we provide medical care without emergency rooms being strained, which some of these states do have? And so there's got to be a balance there, right? And I think there's an imbalance, you know, when southern states, I believe Texas did it. I haven't lived there in a while, but Texas shipped people to New York and some of these other cities. To prove a point or what have you, but we need to have a government that works for people that are living here and people that are coming here, and we're seeing that dysfunction because our federal government is not working well together.
So after you attended UT, then law school, you clerked for some judges in state and federal courts, and you worked as a corporate lawyer for a while, and then you were promoted to senior attorney when you were working for the federal government, then senior policy advisor, managed a number of national programs, helped implement former President Obama's Affordable Care Act, became an administrative law judge.
So I should put that up on my website. That's pretty good.
Are you still an administrative law judge? Are you still working as an administrative law judge?
I am.
Okay. So then how will it work? I mean, I'm just curious myself. How will it work if you become county commissioner? Will you still continue to do that work?
You know, my belief is you need to spend it's a full-time job, so you need to make sure you have the time available for right now. You know, there's a lot of discussion right now whether people are spending enough time in our government to make these important decisions, and I think it's of the utmost importance. So, you know, we'll cross that road when we get there. But I do think it's the priority here is to make sure Multnomah County works, because if Multnomah County works, then Portland works, and then Washington County works, and then it's a trickle-down effect.
I looked at some of the cases that Social Security administrative law judges handle, and when I read the final judgments in the summary, I see that they, you know, they approve a fair number of requests, but they also disapprove many requests. What causes a Social Security administrative law judge to disapprove a request for payouts or benefits? I mean, is it that the person didn't present enough evidence, or did they discover some fraud, or what?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because it varies over time and it varies over location. So what we hear is what's called the third level of appeal. So basically, when someone applies for disability, they about roughly half get disability right away because of the medical records. So some doctors review the medical records. It could be physical doctors. It could be mental, like psychiatrists. They would review the medical records, and then they would issue a decision. If you get denied, if you're a part of that 50% or so that get denied, you can appeal. And then a second set of doctors will take a look at your claim, and then they will evaluate the medical record, and then a portion of those people get disability benefits, and then a portion of those get denied. Those that still get denied after those two levels, then they can ask for a hearing before an administrative law judge. Usually they have a lawyer by then, and then I conduct that hearing, and we have vocational job experts, and we have medical experts at these hearings. And then oftentimes a third level of doctors takes a look at that file, at the medical records, and issues another opinion about that person's impairments. And so now we have a constellation of records. Now, the difficulty is that those records may differ from state to state. So in Texas, they never expanded the Affordable Care Act, which I worked on for a little bit. And so people who are don't make a lot of money may not be able to afford a level of care. Whereas in Oregon and Washington, some of those jurisdictions where I deal with right now, they do get that care through Oregon Health Plan, let's say. So we have a lot more records to look through, a lot more evidence to gauge a person's disability. And then, of course, you know, there's also during COVID, people weren't able to see the doctors, and, you know, there were some changes in policies. So it depends on where you are, you know, which doctors take a look at the claim, how many doctors you have that looked at the claim before and during, and then also the time of year. But that's generally how it goes.
You know, you've been deeply involved in the community since you got here. I mean, I mentioned ERCO. You're a member of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association and Neighbors West Northwest Coalition of Neighborhoods. This is something else that could go on your wall. Metropolitan Youth Symphony Board, past director of hospitality for the Portland Film Festival, vice chair of the NAACP PAC, IFPTE, the AFL-CIO, Judicial Council 1. You served on the Portland Committee on Community Engagement Policing, CPAP. You also served on the Portland Commission of Disability. Why so much involvement? I mean, any one of these could have been a full-time job, and I'm sure that you didn't do them all at once. They had to overlap. I mean, where do you get the energy, and why so much involvement?
Yeah, Don, I need a vacation. You're absolutely right about that. You know, it's for me, it's always been important to give back. And so I'm very fortunate. I went to law school. I got a good job out of law school. I work as an administrative law judge. I'm very, very fortunate, and I realize that. And I've built up a certain experience having done all those things. And so for me, I like to roll up my sleeves and help out wherever I can. So when you mention the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association, you know, we just did a street fair, and it was all volunteer. We didn't charge anybody for it. Even the vendors, we didn't charge them. That takes effort, but it makes the community a more fun place to live. And so with a lot of these things, with the Portland Commission on Disability, there's a lot of people with disabilities that feel unheard. These are all important things, and, you know, we have to have people that donate their time to do it. And so my hat's off to everybody out there that is volunteering, you know, whether it's with Solve Cleanups or in their neighborhoods, or you know, with youth. It's all important. That's what makes Portland a vibrant city. But I think you got to give back.
One of the things that you were volunteering on, I really wanted to talk to you about, was the Portland Charter Commission.
Yeah.
So after, you know, being seated for the whole process, you famously recommended that the new plan, the city government, should not be implemented.
Well, I didn't recommend it shouldn't be implemented. I recommended that people should have a choice. So, you know, at the end of the day, at the Charter Commission, they decided to, the majority of the Charter Commission decided to have one package of things for people to vote on. Now, what we were told, and this might be part of your later follow-up, is I resigned from the commission because we got some polling late in the game that was withheld from us. And so when I heard about this, I realized that this exercise we were going through where, you know, we were told that Portlanders wanted to have just one choice, not many choices, that was not the truth. And so right now people are asking me to this day, why do we have multi-member districts? What does it mean when 25% of the vote gets people elected? How do I know who's doing a good job in my district if there's three representatives and who's not doing a good job? How do I even follow that? And, you know, the people voted on it, and that's what the law is now, but people could have a choice. They could have said, well, instead of four districts, let's have 12 districts so you have one representative. You know, I'm agnostic as to which is better. I mean, there's arguments on both sides, but I do believe in a democracy. We need choice.
Correct me when I'm wrong. When we met in 2019, you were thinking about running for city council.
Yes.
And people had been talking to you about maybe a run for mayor, run for district attorney, and now you're running for Multnomah County Commissioner. And I just wanted to ask, I mean, pardon me for asking this, but it seems like, I mean, do you care about which seat you're running for, or do you just want to be elected? And, if I'm wrong, yeah, tell me why I'm wrong.
That's a very valid question. Someone else raised that one time. And, you know, the mayor and DA, you know, people talk, and you know, you can't stop people from talking. I had no intent to run for mayor, almost no intent to run for DA. I mean, I like that people ask. But I ran for city council because, you know, I had been a member of all these organizations. Some of them I was appointed by the mayor, some by city council. So I saw where the failures in our system were, and I ran for city council because I wanted to fix those failures. But the number one, number two things, maybe even number three on the list of most people's concerns, homelessness, drug addiction, mental illness in our streets, crime, and then the cost of living. The county is smack dab in the middle of things. So I'm not running willy-nilly. I'm running because I see an issue and I try to solve that issue. And the county, if you want to get people off the streets and into services and not have them live and die in our streets, you know, you can vote for the mayor, you can vote for city council, but they won't get the job done. It's the county. They're in charge of the money. They're in charge of the policies. I have a really good perspective on what it takes to be successful there.
Okay, so does the city know that?
The city does know that. And the mayor will say the same thing. Ted Wheeler has said that quite a bit. In fact, they almost pulled out of the Joint Office of Homeless Services because they pay about $30 million into that fund, which is now $400 million. but they say, hey, we have no ability to influence these policies. One of the reasons that all of y'all out there, your roads may have potholes aren't fixed, or you don't have sidewalks in your neighborhood, or your streets aren't paved. Well, that's because we're spending so much money in the city addressing these issues that a county is not. You know, we're spending money on safe rest villages, over $200 per night per person.
Well, if it's the county's responsibility, why isn't it?
Because the county has this ideology that it's housing first, which for some people does work. You know, if you're ready to go into an apartment, and we have the money to pay for that apartment, well, that makes sense. Let's just put you in an apartment and you're good to go. You're not on the streets anymore. But there's also a lot of people that have drug addiction, mental illness, and there's nothing right now to address those people that are not ready for housing, but are not into some sort of care. And so the city is doing, while the county is trying to do this long-term housing first policy, the city is doing this patchwork of fixes. So let's get people off the streets into a safe rest village. Let's get people off the streets into a TOS site, which is, you know, basically a larger village. Let's get people off into a hotel. You know, the city is paying for all these things because there's nothing short-term that the county is doing to make sure that we get people off the streets and into services. And those TOS sites and safe rest villages are actually doing a pretty good job of getting people mental care, drug addiction services, and then when they're ready to go into housing, then they go into the housing.
A critic of yours, Taji Shazamet, I think, served on the Police County Board with you, and he served on the board with you for 2 years, and he said about you, he said, he'll lean into the whiter, wealthier Portland who wants a safer community. And, you know, he calls those folks people who want to act as if they're progressive, but really want the status quo. So I wanted to ask, which do you want?
You know, I was out there during the social justice movement and during the riots talking to people. We brought in hundreds of people to talk about their needs, and we brought those needs to the mayor. I chaired a committee where we wanted to have a racial reckoning, where we wanted to bring in people that understand what it's like to look at the past and the history of abuses that have happened here in Portland by police and other organizations, and bring that to the forefront, talk it out, talk about it openly. We have made those recommendations to the mayor. I'll stand up for small business owners as well. You know, nobody should have their windows broken or stuff stolen as a sign of protest. You know, that's not what we here in Portland stand for. That's not what we here in America stand for. You know, I think Kamala Harris said that she's a law and order liberal.
Kamala.
I believe that as well. There needs to be law and order, but there needs to be progress. And I think that's the problem of progressives right now, is that you're not seeing progress, and we need to make sure that we have that happen.
Would it be accurate to say that you've developed a reputation that tends to lean more toward business and support for PPB, like the business community as well as Portland Police?
Okay. So this kind of goes into, it's not a stark divide one way or the other. And again, people try to, I think, you know, paint you into a corner, like you're either this or you're that. I think that there's a spectrum. And so, you know, if you look at, for instance, the people that have endorsed my campaign, you'll see that it's unions, it's businesses, it's small business owners, it's people that are neighborhood leaders, community leaders. It runs the full spectrum. And so, and nonprofit organization leaders and people that work in the homeless services, what that means to me is you have to listen to their needs. And sometimes those needs intersect and sometimes they don't. So for me to say, like, you're pro-business or you're pro-PPB or you're pro-sheriff or you're against or whatever, it's not about pro or con. It's what are people asking for, and how do you make sure that service is provided?
Well, the reason why I ask is because with all the things that the Portland community has gone through, the COVID, officer shortages, the uptick in crime, the interruption of services, and I just wondered, and there seemed to have been a shift in the milieu of the Portland community from a lot of the more liberal, open intentions to more conservative intentions. In fact, I've gone to a few neighborhood council meetings, and one of the neighborhoods, Lentz neighborhood, I went to one of their council meetings, and the sentiment there was, you know, we've had a lot of mommy energy. Now we need a little bit more daddy energy. I mean, that was sort of the impression. And so I just wondered, you know, what kind of candidates are more likely, do you think, to be attractive to Portlanders, considering everything they've gone through over the last 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I don't think being safe in your neighborhood is a conservative value. I hear from people, especially the elderly, that they don't feel safe walking around anymore. I'll challenge anybody, whether that's a conservative or progressive or liberal value, because that's a universal value. We should all be able to have our kids ride around in their bikes without feeling scared for them. We should all be able to walk our dogs in our neighborhoods, irrespective of our ages. And so, you know, the polling will show what the polling does. And even, you know, a few years ago, there was a wide support for policing. Now, we want to make sure that there's oversight. We want to make sure that they're doing their job well. We want to make sure that there's community policing. So, you know.
Well, let me give you an example. So there is a flag waving protest that's taking place in Clackamas County. It's been taking place since 2016. It happens at the intersection of Oregon 213 and Beaver Creek Road. On one corner, there is a group of people who are conservative and support former President Trump. On the other corner, there is a group of people who support LGBTQ values, and they admit that they are there only because the other group is there. So I asked both groups, I put something up on the KBOO website a couple of days ago, which was the result of those conversations over the last 6 months. And I asked each group the same kinds of questions. What do you want in your community? What do you want to be able to afford groceries at the store? You want free and fair elections. You want to be able to feel safe in your neighborhoods. You're right. These are not conservative or liberal values. They're universal values. And they both agreed with each other that, yes, this is what we want. But the trick is how they each want to go about achieving it. And that was the problem. And so, I mean, I'm asking the same thing here. It's, I mean, I understand that they are all universal values. But then I think that what concerns people sometimes is the difference between progressive candidates and conservative candidates. How do you get there? And what's entailed in getting there? And what are the consequences for agreeing to go along with someone who says they'll take you there?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that's all a valid point. And I appreciate you going out and asking those questions, because many people don't. About a couple of weeks ago, to kind of give you a window in how I work as well, I was asked to come to Cooch Park. Okay, Cooch Park has had an uptick in drug use over there, dealing. And it's around a cathedral school. There's a couple preschools in the area. So parents are very concerned. They're like, come out here because we're seeing a lot more drug use out there. They, at the same time, there was an organization called PPOP, which provides syringes and other drug supplies for people as a harm reduction mechanism. You know, and then there was some conversation as to whether they do needle exchanges or not, you know, but that's perhaps ancillary. I talked to the parents of the people in that school. I talked to people that lived in Cooch Park that were honestly fed up about having to pick up syringes, about their kids not being able to play outside. And that's valid, valid concerns. But then I also spoke with PPOP. I'm like, okay, what are y'all doing out here? Why here versus somewhere else? And they gave their reasons. They've been coming there for a long time. You know, it has to happen somewhere. You know, and there was a lot of antagonism at first because people were yelling at each other, but there wasn't a lot of communication. My interest is understanding, as you mentioned, that commonality, okay? Because I do believe at the base, we're all just trying to get by. Now, you know, conservative, liberal, either, that means a lot of, that's a loaded thing. But for me, it's how do we work together to bridge those divides and get us to where we need to go? And I think that those are universal values. Like, I consider myself a liberal. But, you know, at the same time, we have to make sure that our government works.
You know, endorsements are also a big part of campaigns. United for Portland endorsed you for commissioner in the primary, but just endorsed Megan Moyer for commissioner in the general election, which is a little confusing because technically they're endorsing both of you. How important are endorsements, and what are your thoughts about United for Portland?
Yeah, so I think all endorsements are, and I've been told this word, validators. You know, it means that somebody out there thinks that you are a valid candidate, that you've done, you know, enough work that you're able to make good decisions. And so, you know, people look at the endorsements and they figure that out, you know, whatever that means to them. Now, you know, United for Portland, you know, thinks that the race in District 2, which is between Shannon Singleton and Sam Adams, is a critical race. For whatever reason, they think that Shannon Singleton is an existential threat, I guess. So they're all in on helping Sam Adams get elected, which is that independent expenditure. They don't seem to care anymore about District 1, which is where me and my opponent are running. So we both
have
that
your opponent,
dual endorsement. Megan Moyer.
Who is the current commissioner for District 1? Is it Megan Moyer? She's No,
it's Sharon Myron, Dr. Sharon Myron.
Dr. Sharon Myron. Okay, so she's not running.
She's not running. She's turned out, and she has endorsed my campaign, speaking of endorsers. But she's been in that position for two election cycles, and so you can't run again after that.
So this is just one question I just thought about. So Dr. Myron has been one of the main critics of the way the commission is making decisions currently. Do you expect that you will be taking up her banner and trying to make the commission more transparent in some of its decisions and actions?
Yeah, I fully intend to. One of the first things I did when I announced I was running for office was sit down with Jesse Burke, who ran for District 2. Sam Adams barely inched her out in that race for the general election. But we sat down and we went through the county charter, the county rules for their meetings, as well as this super secret executive rule that the county chair uses to keep things off the agenda, which is kind of makes it a veto of sorts. So if a commissioner wants something to be voted on, but it doesn't get on the agenda, it's basically a veto. Now, we've received an analysis by a law firm in town saying that that's illegal. You can't keep things off the agenda like that, because all the county commissioners are, you know, allowed to put things on the agenda, as well as the district attorney, as well as the sheriff. And so we got to make sure that we hold all our elected officials accountable, including the county chair.
So there are five commissioners right now?
Four commissioners and a county chair.
How many seats are being turned over?
Well, we have three. So, well, Julie Bram Edwards got reelected. Vince Jones Dixon got elected from the east side. And then now it's the north and the west that are still in the running in a general election.
Okay. Okay. And this is my last question. Why should the people of Multnomah County vote for you as county commissioner?
That's an excellent question, because I'm out there actually doing the work. You know, what you need is people that listen to your voices, understand what you're asking for, and are out there representing you rather than representing the special interests. So, for instance, when the deflection center was proposed in the Buckman neighborhood, the Buckman neighborhood was not involved in that. The lease was actually signed before they were told about it. Commissioner Sharon Myron, who's the representative for that neighborhood, was not told about it until after the lease was signed. And I advocated for their needs. I was out testifying at the county commission saying, you know, this is what I'm hearing. This is the need to have open meetings about this. This is a need to have a better plan. That is what our elected officials need to do. Listen and act. My opponent is not out there. She was never at the Buckman neighborhood. She was not out testifying about this kind of stuff. You need people that will come out to your neighborhoods, to your places of worship, to your places where you congregate, and listen and understand and act on that.
I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question because you made me think of another one. So yeah. Regarding the chair, is there any indication as to what the chair intends for the county based on her actions?
Status quo. I mean, all we're seeing is the same old. Give us more money to do what we're doing right now, but what we're seeing is failure, because homelessness has increased by about 50%. Deaths on the street have increased by 400%. Overdose deaths have increased by 500%. And murders on the street have increased by 650%. Okay, that's a failure. But all we're hearing right now is we need more money, we need more time to do the same thing. We're not seeing a change of course. And so we need people like myself that are running to provide that change.
Vadim, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Vadim Mazursky is a candidate for Multnomah County Commission District 1. I'm Don Merrill. Thanks for listening.
À la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie, et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of